about how to learn, what's the best way to learn Tanakh, generally with Purush, without Purush, with Chazal, etc.
The Chasam Sofer wrote in his Tzavua that he wants all of his Yotze Chalot, of all of his descendants, to learn Tanakh im Rashi, Chumash im Ramban. Chasam Sofer he knew a lot of Rambans on Chumash. He quotes in his Chubas, in his diary, he quotes a lot of Ramban on Chumash. He thought you should learn Tanakh with Rashi. A lot of times Rashi is not enough. The Malbim is very good. Yalkut Shemani is also very good. Rav Soloveitchik, when he would learn an Agarata, in yeshiva, he used to skip the Agaritas. But when he learned with the Balabatim, he would never skip any Agaritas. He spent more time on the Agarita than he did on the Halacha, and he explained why. He said, if the Balabatim don't understand the Halacha, so they'll say it's a complicated Halacha, it was above their heads. But if the Balabatim won't understand the Agarita, then they'll make fun of the Gemara. He felt that he can't allow them. So he used to spend more time on Agarita than Halacha when he gave the shir. He used to give a shir for Balabatim every Tuesday night in Manhattan, in a shul there, Maria, 80th Street and Broadway. And people used to come from out of town. Businessmen who had to be in New York used to see to it that they came, Dafka, to be there on Tuesday night to attend the shir. So whenever there was an Agarita with the Gemara, we quote a pasuk in Navi, so he would go through the whole parsha in Navi, and he would often quote... He would often quote from the Malbim. The Malbim often quotes a lot of Midrashi Chazal. The Chazal didn't just take one pasuk out of context from a Novi and say a Pshat. Same thing in Chumash. A lot of times, Chazal have a drasha on a pasuk in Chumash. Well, they take words out of context. They had an additional level of interpretation on the whole pasuk, or additional level of interpretation of the whole perek in Novi. So he would often spend a lot of time with the Balabatim going through the whole parasha in Novi to see how it fits in with the different Midrashim, what the Yalkut Shimoni says, and different Gemaras try to fit. The Netziv was fantastic on that. The Netziv in his very Svarim. He was a phenomenal Baki. The Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Valozhin the last 39 years. Valozhin was a yeshiva that was founded by Rav Chaim Valozhiner in 1801, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, and it lasted till 1891 when it was closed by the Russian government. They finally found out why it was closed by the Russian government. No one ever understood. What did the Russian government care? They kept on coming. They didn't let them learn. They locked the base medrash at night. They insisted they should institute secular studies there. What did they care if the Jews won't make a living? What did they care? So they finally made public, after the communism collapsed, so they finally made public the secret files of the NKVD, the secret service of the communists. So there was a machlekes in the yeshiva in Valozhin whether they should introduce Musa. It was ongoing machlekes for years. So other machlekes in the yeshiva going on. So some of the students mastered to the Russian government that the yeshiva was a hotbed of revolutionaries. So the government kept on coming to investigate. They didn't see any revolutionaries. So they thought they're hiding something. So they wanted to close down the yeshiva, but they didn't have a teretz. So they had to say, we have to limit the learning, they're getting too exhausted, they have to have secular education. So they finally made public the files of the NKVD, they finally translated them into Hebrew, so now we know what the whole issue was. It was because of the Mesirah, the Bachram and the yeshiva, Masa to the government. Anyway, so the yeshiva lasted for 90 years. And the Rosh Yeshiva, the last 39 years, that's a long time, the Rosh Yeshiva, lasted 39 years, was the Netziv. The Netziv was not a direct descendant of Rav Chaim Valozhiner. He married into the family. He married the daughter of Rav Itzhak Valozhiner, but he was not a direct descendant. And there were direct descendants who tried to depose him, who tried to take over the yeshiva. You ever see the pictures of the Netziv with the glassy eyes, with the long peilach? He looks like he's in the stars. He doesn't look like he's in this world. He must have been a very clever man to fight. He gave shurim all the time, and he stood there al mishmar for 39 years to be the Rosh Yeshiva, to fight off all the coups. And the others were direct descent. It's very interesting. Anyway, so this Netziv, he was the father of Rav Meir Bar Ilan and Rav Chaim Berlin. They were brothers. Rav Meir Berlin was the son from the second wife, and Rav Chaim Berlin was much older. He was 40 years older than Rav Meir Berlin. He was the son from the first wife. My first wife died, and then he married his niece. That's also a fantastic story. His niece, his brother-in-law was Dorach HaShulchan. Mrs. Dorach HaShulchan was the sister of the Netziv. Her maiden name was Berlin. And the Torah Tmimu was their son, Torah Tmimu. So Tartmima learned in Valojin, so whenever he quotes something from the Nitziv, he says, my uncle, my brother-in-law, Doidi Gisi, because first he was his uncle, he was his mother's brother. And then his sister, Darach HaShulchan's daughter, was married to a Chassidish guy, and then she ran away from her husband. She decided he doesn't know how to learn. So she was hiding in the forest. It was against the law to run away from your husband. So the police were looking for her. She was hiding in the forest till the police disappeared. Then she came home. And the parents said, what are you, crazy? Your husband's never going to give you a gift. She said, he doesn't learn. He doesn't know how to learn. He said, what do you mean he does not learn? He learns all day long. No, he doesn't know what he's learning. He doesn't know what he's learning. He said, he's never going to give you a get. And he said, she doesn't care. And you're never going to find a shidduch. She doesn't care. She wants to marry a tamachach. So finally she got a get. And then she didn't want to marry anybody else, only a tamachach. So when they heard that the Netziv's wife passed away, Netziv was 40 years older than his niece. So she said, he's a tamachach. I'll marry him. So he married his niece, who was 40 years younger than he was. And she ran the yeshiva, the Yad Chazaka. Their apartment was right adjacent to the yeshiva. The Meir Bar Ilan wrote a whole book about his parents. Rabban Shaul Yisrael, he wrote about it. It was printed by the Mizrahi. He writes a whole chapter about his mother running away from the husband, about the shidduch. Very fascinating. Anyway, so the Netziv was he was known as a fantastic baki. He knew every Tosefta and every Yerushalmi and every Medrash and everything he knew. Unbelievable. Before they had computers. And Rabbanim in Europe, who were looking for Mar Mekaymus on something, used to often visit him and ask him. He used to shake out Mar Mekaymus from all over the place. So he is an expert at this. He'll quote all the Midrashi Chazal from all over the place to show a full picture of how the Chazal understood this pasuk, how the Chazal understood this parsha. An additional level of interpretation. See, that's what you have to try to do. You have to learn. People make a mistake. They think that only Gemara with Tosfos is learning. Tanakh is also learning. Mabesedra is also learning. You have to be Mabesedra every week, and you have to learn the V'yim Uksuv. Years ago, in the early years of the Medina, the early 1950s, there was a Yom HaTzamot observance in Cleveland, in America, in Cleveland, Ohio, where the Tel Zeh Yeshiva was. So it was advertised in the newspapers. It was co-sponsored by the Aguda and by the Mizrahi. So on the bottom of the invitation, it had the name of Mrs. Mordechai Gifter, Rabbi Gifter's wife, and Rabbi Elimeir Bloch. He was the one who founded the Tel Zeh Yeshiva in Cleveland. So I live in Washington Heights with all the Yekis. So some of the Yekis are very strict on their hashkafa. So one of the Balabatim sent a nasty letter to Rabbi Elimeir Bloch. There must be some mistake. You are co-sponsoring with the Mizrahi Yom HaTzmut celebration, but we don't hold from the Medina. What are you celebrating Yom HaTzmut? So he sent him back a letter that was printed later on. Sent him back a letter. What do you mean, we don't hold from the Medina? The Medina is part of the Torah. Eretz Yisrael, Medina is all part of the Torah. He said, and he writes, Bariches, there are three things that the religious Jews ran away from in Europe, and it's a mistake. They ran away from Zionism because the Zionist movement started off by the anti-religious, by the secular Jews, anti-religious Jews, and their interest in establishing a Medina, they're open. It's not a psychoanalytical comment. It's openly, they said they want to establish a Medina to replace the religion. The purpose of establishing a Medina is to do away with the Jewish religion. This should take the place. To maintain the Jewish people, we need something. So they don't want the religion, they want the Medina. So the religious Jews ran away from it. So he says it's not right. They shouldn't have run away. Eretz Yisrael and Tzionut is part of our Taryag Mitzvah Sater. And then they ran away from Tanakh because the Apikursim were interpreting Tanakh not in accordance with the rabbinical tradition. So he said, you shouldn't run away from Tanakh. You should learn Tanakh according to the proper tradition. Then the third thing was, Ledabe Beloshon HaKodesh. There was Achad Ha'am, who was an atheist also. Achad Ha'am had a whole group of writers, and they used to present Hebrew essays. They used to write in Hebrew and talk in Hebrew. So because the Apikursim grew up told that his mitzvah were talking Hebrew, so the religious Jews ran away. So what, they ran away? The Dabbe B'Loshon HaKodesh is one of the mitzvahs. The Rambam writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, they have observed the mitzvah kala kirachamura. Mitzvah kala is the Dabbe B'Loshon HaKodesh, and he quotes sources, the Rambam quotes sources from the Tanakh. There's a mitzvah to speak Loshon HaKodesh. So he says it's not right that the religious Jews neglected these three mitzvahs. We should take them back. This is all part of our religion. We should take them back. We should speak Hebrew properly, not to speak in a improper, in a nivel peh way. We should speak Hebrew properly, and we should learn Tanakh properly, and we should observe Zionism properly. Yeah. We should learn Tanakh properly. That's unfortunately, the problem is still here with us. The Nerdy Behuda has a sefer on brachas that's called the Tzlach, Tzion HaNefesh Chayo. It has nothing to do with Zionism. Tzion. I think his mother died. His mother's name was Chaya. So this was going to be a memorial to his mother. Tzion HaNefesh Chayo, to his mother Chaya. I think so. His mother, his wife, I forgot her name. So in the sefer, he has a comment on a Rashi that was taken out of earlier editions and they finally put it back in the new editions. There's a Gemara in Brachas where one of the Tanaim is giving guidelines to his Talmidim how they should run their lives. So he gives them advice, Minu b'neichem min ha-higayon. See to it that your children don't study higayon. Maza higayon? Logic. What can be apikursis about logic? I happen to have a professor for logic who is an apikurus. But it's lamalu amarad. The logic is logic. So what's so terrible about studying logic? So Rashi learns, Minu b'neichem min, don't let your children study Tanakh. What's that there if you study Tanakh? What's so bad about that? So the missing piece in the Tzlach that was taken out and finally put back in, he writes, as we know in our generation that there's so many maskilim and so many apikursim who are misinterpreting the Tanakh, so that's why the Tana said it doesn't fit in context. In the days of Rabbi Yechman Zakkai, they didn't have apikursim who were misinterpreting the Tanakh. But he says, derech halotza. Maybe that's what Rashi said. Don't allow your children to study Tanakh because the malamed for Tanakh may be an apikurs. The malamed for Gemara won't be an apikurs. The malamed for Tanakh may be an apikurs. In our generation, we had malamdim who taught Gemara, who were not Shomer Shabbos, who were not observant, who were apikurs. Shimon Shkop had a son who was Machal Shabbos. He used to teach Gemara in Toronto. He taught in school in Toronto. No. Yeah.
What's the Rosh Hashiva's opinion on Rav Kahana's efforts for Soviet Jewry and the Jews in America and the Arab problem in Israel?
You have to do whatever works. I don't know. Now they think that maybe he was right. Maybe he was right. Maybe he still is right. I don't know.
Were you pro for him at the time?
I wasn't following. I don't remember him. They said he learned in the Mir Yeshiva the same time I was there in the summer times. When I was in high school, so there was only one shir in the summertime in Yeshiva, and it was by a European Rebbe. I didn't want to go. So instead I went to Brooklyn, I learned in the Mir Yeshiva. But I don't remember him. They said he learned it, I don't remember him in my time. I knew his brother. His brother lives in the old city somewhere, no? His brother was my next door neighbor one summer. He wrote the Mei Menuchas. That's what the brother used to say. My brother is the Mei Meribes, and I'm the Mei Menuchas. Mei Menuchas, many Svarim on Gemara, where he explains what Tosfos is talking about. It's to be Mefarish, a difficult Tosfos. So he wrote a sefer Mei Menuchas. So he used to say his brother is the Mei Meribes, and he's the Mei Menuchas. I guess the generation wasn't ready for his advice yet, so they didn't accept it. I don't know. Politics is complicated. I don't know.
Regarding the Rashi in this week's Parsha, who he darshaned above that we don't seem to have in our text, how do you deal with that from a Machshava perspective?
We have a problem. Rabbi Kivega collects, in the Gilyan HaShas, he collects many different Gemaras and Rashis and Tosis, and where they had a different reading in the Chumash. Okay, we have a problem. We know there's one famous one, Ptsua Daka. Is half of the Sifrei Torah in the world are spelling it with a hey, half spell it with an aleph. So that's a major issue. Every so often, there's a vav, the Taitofa is, but it has a vav, doesn't have a vav. The Gemara says one way, and in our Chumash it says the other way. We don't have the same, the Gemara learns Ad-Dinim from the vav. We don't have the same girsa that the Gemara is learning Ad-Dinim from. That's a big problem. How are you supposed to write the Sifrei Torah? Are you supposed to write the Sifrei Torah the way it says in the Gemara? He's supposed to write the Sefer Torah the way it says in the Balei HaMasorah. So there's a Tshuvas HaRashba where the Rashba says you should write the Sefer Torah according to what it says in the Gemara, not according to the Balei HaMasorah. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch wrote a Sefer on Hilchas Sefer Torah, Kesis HaSefer. All the stuff we use it. Kesis HaSefer. He writes all the dinim of Safrus, writing Sefer Torah and so on. So in the first edition of the Kesis HaSefer, which had the Haskama of the Chasam Sefer. So he quotes this Shuvas HaRashba. You have to follow what it says in the Gemara. You don't follow the Masor. Then the second edition, he left in the Haskama of the Chasam Sefer, and he changed the Psak. And he says, you write according to the Bali HaMasor, you don't write according to what it says in the Gemara. So how did he leave the Haskama? The Chasam Sefer had already passed away. So he couldn't ask him whether he's Maska. It's a big question. Are you supposed to follow all the Sefer Torah? Questionable whether they're kosher or apostle. It's a question. All the Sefer Torah are very questionable whether they're kosher. How can you learn Kriyas HaTorah with a bracha? The Rambam writes in the Mishnah Torah, you can only learn Kriyas HaTorah if you have a kosher or Sefer Torah. If you have a Sefer Torah that's missing one letter, it's already apostle. All the Sefer Torah should be a suffix if they're apostle or not. So the Menchas Chinuch, lived around 100 years ago, and the Svarim after the Menchas Chinuch accept what he said. They don't have any better suggestion. He suggests maybe Sefer Torah Shechasa Reisach is being mamish missing a letter, or if you have a misspelling, let's say you have Noyach is spelled with a final nun instead of a small nun, that's clearly a mistake. Or you spelled Noyach with a chaf. Noyach is a chaf is a mistake. It's supposed to be spelled with a ches. In Yiddish, they talk about spelling the name Noach with seven mistakes. You can make seven mistakes. A long nun, and vav, and yud, and aleph, Noach, and a small chav. That's seven mistakes. Anyway, Noach means even greiser. You can spell the name Noach with seven mistakes. So the Menchas Chinuch suggests, if you have a mistaken spelling, then the Sefer Torah is possible. But Tzua Daka in the dictionary, Daka in Hebrew is spelled Dalet Chafei. Daka in Aramaic is spelled Dalet Chafalot. There are words in the Chumash that are Aramaic. The word means the same thing, whether spelled with an aleph, spelled with a hey. Either way is a correct spelling. One is correct according to the Masor, one is incorrect. But based on the dictionary, either way is correct. So that's what the Menchas Chinuch suggests. Maybe if you're mamish missing a letter, or you have a misspelling, outright misspelling, based on a dictionary misspelling, so then the Sefer Torah is possible. But if you have a molay or a chaser, or you have a tzuadaka, a hey or an aleph, either way is the correct spelling, a with a vav, without a vav. So that's what the Menchas Chinuch suggests. If you know it's a mistake, you should correct it in accordance with the Masorah. But he thinks maybe it wouldn't pass all the Sefer Torah. But it is a serious problem. We don't know. It's already many years since the Torah was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu in the 40 years in the Midbar. So a lot of mistakes would creep in. The Gemara says, Bizman HaTanoim, there were three words in the Chumash that they weren't sure of what the spelling is. Ma'on elekei kedem. Many Sefer Torah had ma'on elekei kedem. And many had ma'ono. Then v'alatzile b'nei Yisrael is in last week's Sedra. V'alatzile b'nei Yisrael l'shalch yoda. V'yechzis ha'lekem v'yochel v'yishtu. So some of the Sefer Torah had v'alzatute b'nei Yisrael, a totally different word. V'alzatute. And I forgot what the third one was. It's a Sifrei. It has all the three issues. So the Tanaim looked. There were three Svarim in the Azara, and the Sefer Azara is supposed to be for the purpose of preserving the correct Masoretic text. So there was a stir among the three Svarim. So they said it's 2-1, and that's it. They paskin based on the two Svarim. They didn't take into consideration all the Sefer Torah in the world. They only took into consideration the Svarim that were in the Azara, because Al-Pidin, the Sefer Azara, is supposed to be for the purpose of preserving the Masor. So they voted 2-1. So these additional issues will have to be determined. What's the correct masor? It is an issue. Sure, it's a serious issue. When the Rambam writes one of the 13 Ikrei Amunos, Os HaTorah, HaMetzuyah HaTabir Adena Hi HaNesuna LaMoshe Abeinu, he doesn't, people ask Akasha, I'm not sure about Tzuadak, I'm not sure about so many things. I don't think he means that. It doesn't mean the text of the Chumash is exactly the same. The text of the Chumash, we know that there are issues of here and a Yud over here and a Dakup, Tzuadakup. We know that there are questions. A lot of psukim, a lot of words, there are questions. The Rama means, HaTorah HaMetzuyata B'yadenehi HaNesuna LaMoshe Rabbeinu. The Rama means that the way we observe the mitzvahs is the correct way. Because what he means to say is like this. There are those who say, the story of Purim never happened. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch had a student in his day school. He had a day school in Frankfurt. So Heinrich Gratz was a student of Hirsch. And then later on, he became an apikoros, and he wrote books on Jewish history. And in Jewish history, you take all the facts, and then you try to fill in the missing, you try to connect the dots and fill in the missing points. So he filled it in the way he saw it fit, with his apikoros. So He thinks the story of Purim never happened. So they tell the story that he once came to shul in Frankfurt on Purim, and he sat near the balcony in his makbet, but he has to hear every word. A good yekke, he has to hear every word. So Rabbi Hirsch asked him after the Kriya Samgila, but you don't believe in the whole thing, it never happened. So he said, but it's a takonas chachamim, that you have to listen to the Kriya Samgila. What takonas chachamim? That's a mistake. It's a mistake, it's a mistake. If you're convinced that the story never happened, so don't waste your time listening. Although those people who are convinced, Orthodox people, they think they're Orthodox, they're convinced that the Nes Chanukah never happened, because they checked through all the sources, and the only source that has this is the Gemara quotes the Megillah Steinis, that there was a miracle with the Pach Hashem, and all the other sources don't have it, so it shows that it's a mistake. So what are you lighting there as Chanukah and saying Shos and Nisim Lavaseinu? If it's a Nitzoch and Amochama, so what are you lighting there as Chanukah? You see Shos and Nisim in connection with the menorah. No, it's a Takanos Chachamim. It's not a Takanos Chacham. If it never happened, so it's a mistake. The rabbis made a mistake, it's a mistake. There are those who believe the Achrayim had the wrong gears in the Rishonim. The Rishonim had the wrong gears in the Gemara. The Amoraim misunderstood the Tanoim. Tanoim confused all the traditions. There are mistakes every level of the way, but whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch is binding. That's the halacha. That's not the halacha. That's a man-made religion. If there are mistakes in halacha, you have to throw them out. If there's a toys, it's a toys. That's what the Rambam says. We believe HaTorah HaMetzuya Atabi Adayna Hi HaNesuna LaMoshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't mean the texts of the Sefer Torah, every letter. You know there are questions on a lot of letters, on a lot of words in the Sefer Torah. It means the way we observe mitzvahs today is Min HaShemayim. Doesn't just mean there was at one time a Torah Min HaShemayim. At one time God revealed Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu and gave Him a Torah. No, it means that we observe the mitzvahs today in the correct fashion. And whenever we discover that there's a mistake, we correct it. And we discontinue mistakes. We don't keep on perpetuating mistakes. For many years, there were a few lines in the Shach and the Choshen Mishpat that no one knew what in the world he said. There are lines in the Shach that don't make sense at all. So about 20 years ago, a non-Jew sold an apartment to a Jewish man in Manhattan. And he said, a couple of books there in the corner, if you want to keep it, if you don't want to throw it out in the garbage, I don't need it. One of the books was the original manuscript of the Shach on Choshen Mishpat. No one knows how in the world it landed up in Manhattan, but the experts who knew the handwriting of the Shach lived in the late 1600s. He ran away from Vilna because of the Chmelnytsky riots in 1666. Xeris Tachvatat at that time. Tachvatat was 1648. He died in the late 1600s. But they know what his handwriting looks like. So they identified absolutely accurate, and then they found what those crazy lines in the Shach mean. What happened was the Shach wrote his commentary, and then he wanted to add something on. So he wrote on the margin a couple of lines, and he put a dot where you should put this. So when the printer set the type, so he wrote it. He read it as one line. So he read this line, then the next line, the next line. All these lines over here, the five lines were supposed to be put in where the dot was. So you have there are six places or so, six or seven places, where no one understands what in the world the Shach is talking about. So now we know, so they reprinted, they set the type anew, it was almost 100 years that they were just reprinting Choshen Mishpat without setting the type anew, they were just making offsets. And when they found the manuscript, the Machon Yerushalayim finally put out a new Choshen Mishpat, they set the type anew. Unbelievable story. And they corrected the mistakes. Whenever there are mistakes, you have to correct them. You're not supposed to perpetuate a mistake. That's the shtick in academia. Academia, you have to say, it's not so, everybody made a mistake, you have to attack everybody. So what are they lighting Chanukah candles? They know in their heart that Chanukah happened. But the academics, they have to say, it never happened, Purim never happened. They know in their heart Purim happened. But that in order to get ahead in academics, you have to say, this is wrong, the Chazal were wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong, Shulchan Aruch is wrong. But why do you observe it? The halacha is binding. No, you know that it's correct. You're not allowed to say. It's arrogance. You're not allowed to say, it never happened. If you're convinced it never happened, never happened. It's a different story, okay? So then you shouldn't observe those dina. The tzedukim were consistent. They didn't believe in the Torah Shabbat Pesach, so they didn't observe it. They wouldn't observe it. There's a kasha that a lot of achrayim work on. Chazanish in Yeridei, Simon Beis, works on the kasha. The Mishnah talks about a tzeduki who doesn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, tzeduki shech tzebehema. So is it good shechita or not? So the tzedukah machal shurim on lifne iver. So if he's going to tell me that he shechted properly and I can eat it, you can't trust him because it didn't hold from lifne iver. But if I was watching and I saw that he shechted properly, so then I can eat from the shechita. So makshim ha'olam. But if an apikoris shechts a shechita senevelo, so the tzedukim don't believe in Torah shebal peh. And it says in Shulchan Aruch, one who believes in Torah shebichsav doesn't believe in Torah shebal peh is an apikoris. So apikoris dina kachman, so it should be shechita senevelo. So the Chazon Ish works on that kasha, and Simon Beis and Yerides. He gives two terutz, one terutz on top of the page and one terutz in the footnote on the bottom. He rarely has footnotes on the bottom. So one of the terutzim goes as follows. The tzedukim were consistent. They didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, so they didn't follow Torah Shabbat Peh. They only follow a God-given religion. A man-made religion they don't follow. So if you're consistent, and you don't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, but you're consistent, so then you're not an apikoris dina kakum. But if you don't believe in the Torah Shabbat Peh, and you still follow all the dinim in Shulchan Aruch, because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, then it's a man-made religion. So then you're a nut. That's a man-made religion. That's an apikoris dina kakum. A guy who doesn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, but he follows the Shulchan Aruch anyway. So that's an apikoris dina kakum. But if he's consistent like the tzedukim, then the Chazon Ish says, that's not dina kakum. You got to be consistent in life. So that's what it means. HaTorah HaMetzuya Atabi Adena Hi HaNesuna LaMoshe Rabbeinu. I don't think the Rambam is talking about the text of the Chumash. The days of the Rambam, he knew that there were issues on the text also. The Toitofes, there were a lot of issues on the text of the Sefer Torah. There were a lot of issues in the days of the Goyim. There were a lot of sfeikus on spelling of words and the psucha, stuma, a lot of issues. He doesn't mean the text of the Sefer Torah. He means the observance of mitzvahs. We believe that we're observing the mitzvahs properly. And if we find out that there's a mistake, we're going to discontinue observing it like that. Our religion is a God-given religion. It's not a man-made religion based on errors that were transmitted from generation to generation.
Is it mutter for somebody that lives in Eretz Israel to go on vacation in Oslaritz?
Posh Pshat and the Gemara seems that it's not right. But the question is, why only those who live in Eretz Israel? Anyone? All the people who live in Chutzlo should move to Eretz Yisrael. And if you're touring in Eretz Yisrael, you should. I remember the first time I visited Eretz Yisrael, so I had to bring money to Rav Beryl Soloveitchik. So we carried on the whole conversation. It's interesting. First he was talking to me, then my wife was giving him a hard time, so the whole time he was talking to her. My wife is very spunky. So she gave him over the head, so he liked that. So he was carrying on conversation with her. So he was telling us, among other things, he says in Yiddish, you are arrested here. You're in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to leave. Also, lots of Eretz Yisrael l'chutz l'aretz. So my wife said to him, and who's going to bring the money? Someone has to bring the money from chutz l'aretz. He was telling me, I was supposed to learn by him. Originally, I had learned by Rav Soloveitchik 9 years, and then I got a passport with a visa to spend a year in Eretz to learn by him. And then I met my wife that summer, and I got married, and I never came. So he started to give me a hard time. Why didn't I come? Then at the end of the whole conversation, he realized I wouldn't have liked his shir anyway. He wouldn't have been happy that I should be in his shir. But first, he started to say. So I said, well, I got married. So he said, well, most of the boys that he learns with are married. So I said, well, I have to make a parnasa. So he started telling a whole story that Rab Chaim did not send his son Rab Elbala to the university. So the Balabatim asked Rab Chaim, he won't be able to be appointed as a rabbi because the government made a law. He can only be appointed as a rabbi if you have a university degree. So Rab Chaim said, Vatanish Van Kerov. So he won't be a rabbi. They said he can't be a Rosh Hashiva either because Rosh Hashiva has to speak Polish. He has to raise money. He doesn't know how to speak Polish. But then he won't become a Rosh Hashiva. So they said he can't be a shoemaker. He can't be a tailor. He can't do anything. He has to be able to speak the language of the land. So Abchaim said, he says he can be a poor man. He'll be a poor man. That's the parnasa he'll do. So Rabbi Beryl Soloveitchik turns to me and says, I have a parnasa for you. You should become an oraman. You should become a poor man. So my wife said to him, and who's going to bring the money? Then he started up with my wife. Tisha B'Av was on a Sunday. Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbos, and it was Nitchet to Sunday. So my wife had a cold. So she was coughing and she had a sore throat. So we came to him on Monday, the day after Tisha B'Av. So he asked her, they're all nervous about sickness. Everybody's going to die. So he asked her, did you take any medication for take for a cold? What medication did you take for a cold? So she says, no, it was Erev Shabbos and then Tisha B'Av. Yeah, I figured it's going to get better by itself. So he says in Yiddish, you shouldn't have fasted. You shouldn't have fasted. You should have eaten on Tisha B'Av. She said, my husband paskes the shilas for me. I didn't ask you to shile. My husband paskes the shilas for me. So he liked it because she was very spunky. So the whole conversation switched to her, an hour and a half worth. So that was one of the things that he said. I'm arrested here in Eretz Yisrael. You can't leave Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, some of the Gedolim write that it's only those who live in Eretz Yisrael they're not allowed to leave. Those who are visiting can leave. Why does it make a difference? I don't see the difference. The Ramban says a mitzvah, all the Jews should live in Eretz Yisrael, unless you have a good explanation. Why not to? Whoever can make a decent parnasa in Eretz Yisrael has a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. If you can't make a decent parnasa, there's no mitzvah to live off of welfare here. Mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael normally. I remember I was once in Los Angeles on a plane. I had to speak there for the OU. So I was going to come by plane to New York in an LL plane, and I was going to go on to Eretz Yisrael. So till the plane took off, there was some delay. So I see a guy go from the business class to the back, had to go to use the bathroom. And he looked very familiar. I didn't remember who he was. I remember him from the yeshiva. I didn't remember exactly. And he was wearing what he called dungarees.
Jeans.
He was wearing torn jeans. And he was wearing sneakers without any socks. So when he comes back from the bathroom, he says, "Hi, Reb. Shalom Aleichem." He was in my shiur 20 years earlier. He was in my shiur a long time ago. I'm a Rebbe over 40 years. So he was in my shiur a long time before. So I said, what do you do for a living? He said he was married, he had children, and he was a radiologist in California. He was making about $3 million a year. It's possible. Radiologist makes $3 million a year. So it sounded like an exaggeration. Then he says he decided he's going on Aliyah. He moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he lives with all the poor people in the Savyon. That's where all the multimillionaires live, on the outskirts of Tel Aviv. He lives in Savyon, but he only makes $500,000 a year. He says his wife can't get used to living in poverty. $500,000 a year. So he's going to have to move back to America now. So that's why he came. So I was going to give him a $5 bill, a donation, to buy a pair of socks and to buy a pair of pants. Now, so if you can live in Eretz Yisrael and make a parnasa of $500,000 a year, so if it's a reasonable parnasa, you have to live in Eretz Yisrael. If you're going to live in poverty, so that's taka no mitzvah. To live in poverty in Eretz Yisrael is nishke mitzvah. To live off of tzedakah is nishke mitzvah. But to live and to make a living here, to do something productive in Eretz Yisrael is taka mitzvah.
Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva that you shouldn't eat veal because it's tarbal chayim. If the mitzvah was such that the chickens and all the animals were not treated right in the slaughterhouses, so would it be that we wouldn't be able to eat chicken?
Moshe recommends we should boycott the veal. He says he saw the sheep at the veal farm and they were wobbling, they were in pain. Today the Rabbanim say they went to the farm where they prepare the veal, they don't wobble and they don't seem to be in pain anymore. And Moshe was describing a different mitzvah. Now Moshe writes, because they can barely walk, the veal can barely walk, because they give them a special diet where the muscles don't develop. That's why when you eat the veal, it goes down your throat like butter. It's fleshy, but it goes down your throat like butter. But it's very soft because the muscles, the diet that they give, so the muscles don't develop. It's very soft. So he said that since the animals don't walk, so it's a suffix trephis, so you have to check for all the trephis. So after he wrote that tshuva, they checked for quite a while, and they said, turned out there were no trephis. So Rav Moshe raised an issue, and they checked it out. They say that now there's no issue of tzar balechai. They didn't. The Rabbanim who went to the farms, they didn't think there was any tzar bal chaim. Now they didn't think there's any issue with the treifas either. The issue with the veal came out about 8 years ago. I don't know that the special diet that they feed the sheep, that they shouldn't be able to develop the muscles. The special diet was pas b'chol of their isa. They cook meat and milk, and that's the only thing that they feed the animal. So that's Taisvis in the end of Temura comments on a Mishnah there. Behemish in its patma, call you mechaya, be suri hano, so you're not allowed to eat the flesh. So the Mechaber doesn't paskin like Taisvis. Mechaber paskin like the Rambam, who rejects that whole Mishnah. But the Rambam paskins like the Taisvis, so for Sfardim, there's no problem. That's what Chacham Avadya Yosef writes. For us, there's no problem. You people have your problem. He says, we don't have any problem. We follow the Rambam and the Mechaber. Shaila is the Ramot Paskin that like the Taisas, Behemish and his Patman, Koli Mechayel, for quite a few months before they shech the veal, the only food that they give it is this Pasa B'chol of the Rasa. So that was a big issue. So the Rabbanim, so one of the Rabbanim suggested, Rabbi Ganak from the OU suggested to them, we were sitting in the office and talking to these people who prepared, they came to Rabbi Ganak to discuss, Rabbi Ganak was involved in the politics with the governor of New Jersey. So they came to Rabbi Ganak, he should do them a favor, three representatives of the three, those who produce the feed, the special diet that they give to the sheep. So they came to ask Rabbi Ganak for a favor in politics. And then when they're telling him the whole story, so then he realized that we have a shayla basa b'cholov, that all the veal should be osa b'achila. So he called me into the office. I'm in the OU office on kashrus on Fridays, usually on Friday. So they tell over the story again. So then I was talking to Rabbi Ganak. So Ganak asked, what would be if instead of the meat from cow's meat that's cooked in milk, what if you would take pork and cook it in milk? So the guy says, chaza? The guy says, Chaz, Rabbi Ganak says, how do you know what Chazer is? So he says, his wife is Jewish. He married a girl whose parents were Holocaust survivors. Holocaust survivors, and their daughter married a guy. So he says, but that's Chazer, Rabbi, it's Chazer. It's going to be a bigger problem. So he explains to him, no, but the B'chalim is only if it's Kosher meat. Oh, and the guy says, well, what an eye-opening idea. So. Then it turned out they didn't switch. They said they can switch the chaza, but they didn't switch the chaza. The Rabbanim went to the farm and they ascertained that it's not the way the representatives of the companies presented it. They came to the realization it's not basa b'chol of the rice. It's only basa b'chol of the Rabbanim. They don't really cook the meat with the milk. They mix it together. It's a klisheni. It's not a klivishan. It's only basa b'chol of the Rabbanim. Basa b'chol of the Rabbanim is muta b'arno. So that's the issue. So there are many who don't eat veal because the Rama himself says, "Beimish in his pat makoy mechayah bisuri achila." Also, you're not allowed to eat. So still a shayla. But at least it's not what Taisus says. Taisus only says based on the mission, "Beimish in his pat makoy mechayah bisuri hano." That's also to eat, but bisuri achila. So that's the chumra from the Rama that others don't observe. The Shach isn't happy with that Rama.
Chicken.
If they don't treat them properly. We ought to organize a boycott. Like our Moshe said, we ought to organize a boycott. Milk. They don't treat the behemoths nicely either. When they milk the cows, they milk them for all they're worth. They milk them three times a day. In Europe, they say they never milk the cows three times a day. Now they milk them three times a day. And the whole lifespan of the animals, that the dairy cows, is only about 3 years. And then they develop sirchus and they become very sick. It's a big problem. It's a big problem on all the milk. They say that the cows, the dairy cows in America, 98% of them, when they shech them, are overgrown with sirchus on the lungs, means full of diseases. So how can you drink any milk? All the milk is cholav behema trefa. How can you drink the milk? Other parts of the world, they told me in South Africa, they told me that it's 90% of the dairy cows that they shech them are overgrown with sirchus. In America, they told me it's 98% are overgrown with sirchus. I can't drink any milk. It's a serious problem.
Are there any guidelines for Rabbanim arguing with other Rabbanim from previous generations, like Achorinim or Rishonim, or even further than that? And if not, is it more for anyone with smicha nowadays to argue with Achorinim or Rishonim?
Rav Moshe Feinstein has a lot of tshuvas where he disagrees with the Nerdi Yehuda, with the Chsam Sofer, with the Vilna Goen. So there's a Hungarian rabbi passed away already from New York City, a big time. Who wrote a whole book attacking Rav Moshe Feinstein. Moshe's from a called Igris Moshe. So he wrote a sefer, Mana Le'Igoris. It's a very nasty sefer. He had a lot of things that he knew how to learn. He writes a very strong tainus again. Rav Moshe tshuvas are not. There's room to dingzach on a lot of things that Moshe Feinstein said. So he has an attack, so he writes, Moshe was so arrogant, such a balgaiva, he thinks he's bigger than the Nadi Behuda and the Chsam Sofer, bigger than the Milagani, disagrees with him. I knew Rav Moshe Feinstein. People alive knew Rav Moshe Feinstein. He was extremely humble. He was not at all arrogant. He didn't even realize his greatness. Sometimes you would carry on a conversation with him. In a certain sense, he was naive. He's humility to the extent of being naive. Unbelievable. He was not arrogant at all. So when the Sefer came out, he was so hurt. What happened was, the old Igros Moshe always used to be printed, two columns, a style of printing, by a certain publisher, Schusterman, in New York City. So the guy was setting the type for the Manali Igros, and it was printed exactly the same kind of a page. So he called up Rav Moshe, and the guy was setting the type. He was enraged. The guy said, Rav Moshe is an apikoros, and I'm Arba Mamzer, and he has such lashanis, man. So he called up Rav Moshe, and he said, he's setting the type for a sefer. He asked the Rosh Hashiva, he's setting the type for a sefer where he disagrees with the Rosh Hashiva's tshuvas. Is it permissible for him to print the sefer? Moshe said, everyone has the right to say whatever they want. You can set the type. So he said, okay. Then he printed the sefer. Not just he disagrees with Rav Moshe. He said he's an apikoros and an amoritz and a balgaiva. So Rav Moshe was so hurt. That's what the guy asked me. He said, let's set the type. He was so hurt by that. So the Agudas Arbonim made an isa. No one's allowed to sell the svarim. The Isad used to have full of svarim stores. So no one sold the svarim. He got the svarim was sold. But it wasn't sold by the svarim stores. He sold it himself. So Rav Moshe said, maybe I'm not entitled to an opinion at all. You have to be a chacham shehigiyah lahayroah. Not every rabbi who gets smicha is considered a chacham shehigiyah lahayroah. Maybe I'm not entitled to an opinion at all. But people keep on insisting. They want to know my opinion. And they keep on insisting, I am entitled to an opinion. So if I am entitled to an opinion, I'm obligated to give my honest to goodness opinion, even if it's a disagreement, with greater talmidei chachamim who came in earlier generations. The Gemara has a klal, Ein bezn yochel abatel dibi bezn chavem ken goy lemenem b'chochme v'minyan. So the Rambam and the Tosfos and the Rosh and all the Rishonim quote the Yerushalmi. Shalmi says in the beginning of Masechta Shviyos that klal only applies when the earlier bezn made a din de rabbanon and the later bezn wants to repeal a din de rabbanon. And yochel levatel dibi bezn chavem. Levatel means to repeal a takana de rabbanon. But if you're arguing what the din is, then if you hold the din is like this, and I hold not so. So if I am entitled, you have to express your honest to goodness opinion, even if it's a disagreement with those who preceded you. That's what Rav Moshe said. That's Taka the Din. In the Ramon Chayshem Mishpah in Simon Chafei writes, Simon Chafei in Chayshem Mishpah is the famous sugya of Shikal Adas. That's the most difficult, most famous sugya Maseches Haredin. If the Bez made mistake in Psak and they awarded the money to him, when can they reverse the Psak and make him give back the money? When can they not reverse the Psak and they have to pay from their pocket? And when do they not have to reverse the Psak and they don't have to pay from their pocket? So it's very complicated. Sugya, many different opinions in the Rishonim. So that's the whole Simon Chafei. So the Ramah writes there in the middle of Simon Chafei and Chayshem Mishpat, a Bezdin in our generation, a Rabbanim in our generation, let's say they want to disagree with the Gaonim, Rav Haigon, Rav Shveri Gaon, whatever, they want to disagree with the Gaon. So he says, you better consult with other contemporaries, maybe you're making a big mistake. But if you consult with others and you presented your Haichachas, and you convinced the others, they all think that you're right and the Gaonim are wrong. Then he says, you have a right to disagree with the Gaonim. Shalas, how far back can you go? Achreinim can disagree with Rishonim, with Goinim. How far back can you go? So the Ramah says, no. Whatever says in the Gemara, you can't say, I disagree with the Tana. I disagree with the Amora. I think the Din should be different. So the Vilna Gaon writes on that line in Shulchan Aruch, that's what it means in the Gemara, in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Ches. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, Zeh Sefer told us Odom. In Parshas Bereishis. So the simple reading of the Chumash, the Pasuk, sounds like that Sefer Torah is a history of mankind. Sefer Torah is a history of mankind. It's a very poor history book. So the Gemara says it doesn't mean that. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Adam HaRishon, Sifrei Shel Adam HaRishon, it's called. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Adam HaRishon the way all of history will unfold in the course of years, and the way halacha will be developed in every generation, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding the world that it should come to a certain result, that the halacha should be developed in a certain way. So the Gemara tells the story, the Rav Shmuel both learned by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and Rabbi got smicha, Shmuel didn't get smicha. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi felt bad about it. What? Shmuel had to leave. He had to go to Bavel to establish a yeshiva. Rav went and Shmuel went to establish yeshivas in Chutzla. They needed the Chutzla, the Jews live in Chutzla, they needed Rabbanim to guide them. So Rav left and Shmuel left, and Shmuel had to leave. The boat was leaving, so he left and he never got to get the smicha. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi felt bad. Shmuel was one of his star students. And then somebody told Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, don't feel bad about it. That's what it says in the Sifra Shalot HaMarishon. There's going to be Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi's going to get smicha. Shmuel's not going to get smicha. This is all preordained. This is all the Rabban Shalom's plan from Sheshes Mei Bereshis. So in the Sifra Shalot HaMarishon also says, Rabbeinu Rav Ashi Soif HaYiroa. Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, that's the end of the Talmud Bavli. That's the end of a period. From Yeshua Ben Nun until Rabbeinu Rav Ashi was one long period when the Torah Shebaal Peh was still being transmitted Baal Peh. And after the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, that's when they started to learn Mishnayos from a written text. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi edited the Mishnayos, but it's still being recited orally. It wasn't written down yet. They weren't giving Shurim and Mishnayos from a written text. So the full Masorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh lasted from the days of Yeshua Ben Nun till the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi. Then from that time on, from Rabbeinu Rav Ashi till the very present, everybody is in the second step, the second level of Chachmei HaMasorah. So anyone who's entitled to an opinion, that's a big if. If someone is entitled to an opinion, so he's entitled to express his opinion, even if it's a disagreement with many who preceded him. That's the big question, who's entitled to an opinion? So sometimes you look, I remember when someone gave me a set of Shadis Achuvis. I used to learn with his son in the summertime on vacation. He had a lot of sons. Every summer I learned with a different son. So he used to buy me matonis, a svarm that he knew I wouldn't have. He bought me a Galician Achuvis svarm. He was a Galician, so he got me all the Galician Achuvis svarms. I remember once on a Thursday night, I finished learning with the boys, and then I'm sitting in the corner and I'm laughing. My wife says, "What are you reading over there?" My wife is knitting a sweater. "What are you reading over there?" So I said, "Yankel Habishtam gave me this new sefer." So she said, "So what's so funny?" So I said, "It was six volumes of Shalosh Tshuvos from one of the Rabbanim who was still alive at that time." I said, "The guy has tshuvos that are ridiculous. Mamsha galechta. Anything, he felt he was one of the major poskim of the generation. His tshuvos are considered by the Eirach HaRedes. They consider him one of the major poskim." It was a joke. In every generation you have like that. People thought that they're God's gift to humanity. And they wrote Shadas to Chuvis. These are the Rishonim, you have silly things. These are Rashi and the Bala HaTosis. You have, not everybody who lived in the days of Tosis was a Bala HaTosis. Not everybody was entitled to an opinion. A lot of them were jokers, were kibbutzes. They didn't know anything. And they thought they were entitled to an opinion. That's a major issue. How does a person know that he's not making a mistake? How does he know that it's a chacham shehigia lo hayro? That's a big issue. A chacham shehigia lo hayro is entitled to an opinion. And then he has to... in Yiddish, they say like that. The Gemara says, Yiftach bedor kishmol bedor. Yiftach in his generation is entitled to paskin the way he says, just like Shmuel in his generation. Even though Yiftach didn't know how to learn like Shmuel, Yiftach bedor kishmol bedor. So in Yiddish folklore, they say, Abba v'ch Yiftach ishbar. Was Yiftach an ishbar? Yiftach was not an Am Haaretz. The pasuk doesn't mean Yiftach. It means if some person digs a bar. V'ch Yiftach ishbar. Yiftach was not an Am Haaretz. You're right. The rabbis in every generation are entitled to an opinion if they know what they're talking about. If, like I remember when I learned Yerideus, I was supposed to have a bechina, so I chazed the Yerideus, and then I wanted to test myself. So I looked in the Igros Moshe, and I read the Shaila, and I decided what the din should be based on my extensive knowledge of the Yeridei. The Rav Moshe quotes a dogma of Vava. I never heard of it. from out of space. I remember when we learned Yevamos. We learned Yevamos, and we learned the Sugis of Tzodaka Khrushchevcha. We read the Yeridei. We read the Eben Ezer. And there Rav Chaim Volozhin has a tshuva. We went through the whole tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and then we said we're going to test ourselves. So we read the Igros Moshe to see what the Shaila was, and we're going to say what the din is. And Moshe Kohn's a Gemara and Bchoris we never heard of. Had nothing to do with anything, and he shows how it does have to do. And the whole din changes based on his Gemara and Bchoris. So you can't, there's no such thing. A person is an expert in this area. guy's an expert in Mikvois, a guy's an expert in Erevin. You can't be an expert in Erevin unless you know all of Shas. There may be a Gemara somewhere that you never heard of. You say, a guy has an expertise, his specialty is medical ethics. Which Masicht is medical ethics? You have to know all of Shas to know medical ethics. Just because you read all the literature doesn't mean you know all the Gemaras. There may be a Gemara that of a Feirush Gemara that you never heard of. It's always like that. You learn all of Maseches Git and you think you know all there is to know about Maseches Git. There's a Gemara in the first Perek in Yuma that has ideas that don't appear anywhere in Gittin. Mazel is a Taisus in Gittin will quote the Gemara in Yuma. But there's always something like that. There's always a Gemara somewhere else. You have to know everything to be entitled to an opinion. Unfortunately, many people crack themselves up to be G'dolei HaTorah, and they're missing a lot of knowledge.
What does Rosh Hashiva think about Haredim not going to the army?
About who not going to the army? Haredim. It's scandalous. It's terrible. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was a very normal person. So he has a grandson who teaches in Chappelle's. The grandson lives in Herzl many years. So he said, he told me many years ago, when his grandfather was still alive, he asked him, should he go to the army or not? So he said, his grandfather said, if you only come to Herzl to learn for 3-4 years, and then you're going to go back to America, so they don't need you in the army, they have enough people here. But if you plan to live here indefinitely, he's still here already 30 years. So of course you have to go to the army. What kind of a shot? Everybody's supposed to go to the army. What kind of a din is that? The Gemara says, you don't drift Talmid HaChachamim. Every bochan yeshiva is a Talmid HaChachamim. It's not so. I agree with Rabbi Dov Lior. I spent 2 summers vacationing in Kiryat Arba. There's a big yeshiva there. I don't know, there used to be. I don't know, it's still open. I don't know, yeah. So I was giving shurim in Yeshivas Hezda there. I was giving shurim in the Kollelim there also. So Rabbi Dov Lior is a very snappy fellow. So the first summer I was there, he didn't talk to me at all. I was giving shurim in his yeshiva, he didn't talk to me at all. Rabbi Waldman was his partner. Rabbi Waldman is an American, so he spoke to me the whole time. But Rabbi, he's the one who got me to come. But Rabbi Dov Lior, the last week I was there, he came over to me. We were staying in the hotel with all the tourists from America. And he spoke to me for 10 minutes. He speaks very quickly. And he gave him his whole hashkafa sachayim from A to Z in 10 minutes. And he can do it too. He gives you everything. He was telling me about a lot of things. So he said, the Gemara, the Mishnah says in Saita that you don't accept into the army a person who's a bal aver. The army should only be only hezdanikim. They're not allowed to take any chilonim into the army. You win the war because the soldiers are frum. Then he said, as long as America supports Medina Yisrael, they'll be on top. The minute they're going to stop supporting Medina Yisrael, they will no longer. So the Medina should not be afraid of what the American government is going to say. If they don't support the Medina, they'll fall down the Haraya. The British used to be one of the world powers. Years ago, when I was a little boy, Britain was one of the major world powers. And then after the Sinai campaign, and the British were angry why Medina Sassol didn't let them know in advance about the Sinai campaign, so they stopped supporting Medina Sassol. So that's when they lost their Kavadika position, and the same will happen to America. The minute they'll stop supporting Medina Sassol, they'll stop being a world power. That was in 1 minute. Then he had another 9 minutes to explain. He speaks very quickly. Even when he speaks in public, he always speaks very quickly. He says things as they are. He's known for that.
How do you go about deciding halacha?
Not easy. You have to have a masoro. Rav Soloveitchik had a very strong masoro in Hashkofe, very strong masoro in Psak, and a very strong masoro in Derech Halimur in Gemara. And he had an obsession of giving over everything that he had. After the war, so much Torah was destroyed by the Nazis, so many Talmidei Chacham were killed. So he was always saying over everything that he had. People didn't realize that people thought he's making up things. He had original ideas. He had a couple of original ideas, okay. But most of the things that he said over, years later, we realized these are old traditions. These are old traditions that he had from Valozhin and from the Vilna Goyen and from other Gedolim. In the course of the years, if you would pay attention, on his first Yahrzeit, I published the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, a memorial to Rav Soloveitchik. I quoted a lot of things that he said. So people were upset about the book. Some of the people remember Rav Soloveitchik were upset. I wrote a lot of halachos that he had, and I wrote that it's based on a Rashba, and it's based on the Rambam, and it's based on the Vilna Gaon. They were upset about that. They thought he was a wild mere genius, and he says whatever he darn pleases, and we can do the same thing. And then I wrote, no, he said it's based on the Rashba. What are you based on? He said, when they were in the Shir, they never heard that, but I was in the Shir 10 years. So 9 years he didn't say, but 1 year he said it's based on a Rashba. He said, and many of the things he had were traditions he didn't invent them. There were traditions from Volozhin. One of the things that people have tainus, he's a modern feminist. He used to say, when he said to Sherman, Hilchas Chanukah, he said, Ne'el Chalecha V'yechad, everybody lights their own menorah. The married women should also light their own menorah. So now they published that Rav Moshe Feinstein said that. Rav Moshe Feinstein's mother lit her own menorah. And he said this was, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a cousin of Rav Soloveitchik's mother. Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather was Feinstein, Rav Dalia Feinstein. That was Rav Moshe's uncle. So Rav Moshe said his mother was married to his father, and she used to bench him on Chanukah, and that was the tradition from Volozhin. Ulai Mehagro. That's what they call it for Rav Moshe. Ulai Mehagro. Mrs. Feinstein, Rav Moshe's wife, did not light her own menorah, because Rav Moshe was a gentleman, and he didn't want to pressure his wife to observe his family menhagim. Her family meaning was that the married women don't light their own menorah. That's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Ramah and the Darkei Moshe. It's a bracha l'batol, ishti kegufay. But he said his mother's practice was, and the tradition from Volozhin. So a lot of things Rabbi Soloveitchik did, people didn't realize. He's just saying all the traditions from Yom. He's not making them up. A couple of things he made up on his own. Okay? But with the vast knowledge that he had. So you have to have a lot of traditions in Misak Halacha. You have to have a tradition how to analyze a situation. A Masorah transmits attitudes also. You have to have attitudes that are transmitted by Masorah. There are people who learn by Rabbanim, but they don't want to pick up the attitudes of the Rabbanim. So the Gemara has an expression for such people. He only wants to pick up the dinim from the Rebbe. He doesn't want to pick up the hashkofas, the attitudes. So the Gemara calls that boy beraboisa. He's kicking the Rebbe in the pants. Boy beraboisa. You have to pick up. The Chachmei HaMasorah had attitudes on things. How to approach Gemara, how to approach Psak and Shulchan Aruch. We don't always follow the Shulchan Aruch. On every page, the Shach and the Taz often disagree. The Mishnah Berurah reversed the Psak HaMakubal. For centuries, there was a psak on Mekubal and Orach Chaim. Mishnah Berurah reversed the psak on every single page. That's why it's not so clear that we should follow the Mishnah Berurah. The Chazon Ish was not happy about the Mishnah Berurah. Chazon Ish said, why did he reverse the psak just because they came up with new Kisvei Yad? He always reverses the psak. They came up with the Maram Chal V'am Sochem, and they came up with the new edition of the Yireim and the new Ksav Yad of the Urzarua. So why should we reverse the psak? We had a psak on Mekubal for centuries already. For many generations, leave the psak the way it is. The psak was based on other rishonim. Rav Soloveitchik also, he had a lot of traditions. Sometimes you don't follow Shulchan Aruch, sometimes you do follow Shulchan Aruch. You have to have heavy traditions on these things. A person has to be humble to be entitled to an opinion. The Gemara says that in the many disputes between the Bisham and the Bisilo, the overwhelming majority of the times we pass like Bisilo. So the Gemara says one of the reasons why is because on the Sonim Hoyu, they were more humble than the Beisham. It doesn't mean Beisham were arrogant, but the Beisilah were more humble. The one who's more humble stands a better chance of being Mechaben Al Ho'emes. The person is arrogant, talks it into himself, I know better than everybody else, and whatever occurs to him on the spur of the moment, the first instinctive reaction, that's the din. Sure, and he's not willing to listen to any modification, because he's God's gift to the world. So arrogant people will often find it hard to be Mechaben Alemis. Once they make up their mind, so they're not going to change. And then a humble person stands a better chance of being Mechaben Alemis. So that's why you, Aseh Lecha Rav, you have to pick a Rebbe to Paskan Shailas. It has to be a humble person. It has to be a Yirei Shamayim. The Gemara says, why do we have to follow the Psak of a Talmud Chacham? So the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, Soir Hashem the Yirei of Risa Lohodiyam. We assume that a Yirei Shamayim will have a Siyata Dishmaya to Paskin properly, to be Mechaben Alo Emes. Human beings can always make mistakes. We don't believe in the principle of infallibility. That's from the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That's what they picked up. The Haredim and Eretz Yisrael The Rabbanim are infallible. Where did you get this from, infallible? In Chumash, there's a parsha of Parhalim Dovashel Tzibur, that the whole Bez Nagadol, all 71 members, made a mistake. So you see, it's possible to have a unanimous vote on an Issa Koresh, to be Mata an Issa Koresh. There is no such klal, infallibility, by the Pope. By the Obdi Abadazar, they have such a club. By us human beings, Moshe Rabbeinu made mistakes. Chumash records Moshe Rabbeinu made mistakes. And Aaron had to correct him. And he accepted, Moshe Rabbeinu was humble, so he accepted Aaron's suggestion. He said, you're right. Echalti chatas hayam, you're right. So you have to, Talmid Chacham, who's the Yirei Shamayim, so then you'll have the promise, Sod Hashem L'Yireyav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give a divine assistance to the Yirei Shamayim to pass him properly. You have to ask a person who's humble or has Yerushalayim. You have to ask an honest person. Sometimes you have learned Rabbanim, but they're not honest. They'll give up psak, whatever you know the Balabas wants to hear. So, in Flatbush, they all want to hear Chumras. None of the Rabbanim are prepared to tell them a kula. One of the Rabbanim in Flatbush was trying to convince me I should move to Flatbush, I should open my own shtiebel. All the shuls on Nisach Svart, I should open up a Nisach Ashkenaz shul. I'll get a lot of people, but Herschel, do me a favor. One thing, don't tell them all of your kulas. They don't want to hear the kulas. What do I mean? They don't. I'm going to say it as it is. I'm going to say whatever the din is. So the latter Rabbanim, if the Balabas is looking for a kula, they'll tell him a kula. Balabas looking for a chumra, tell him a chumra. That's dishonest. If Balabas asks a shayla, you have to be honest. Then you have to have a lot of patience. A lot of Talmid Chachamim are very nervous and very jittery. They don't have patience to listen to the whole story. When they hear half of the story, they already make up their mind what the din is. You have to listen to every single detail of the case. If one detail is different, so maybe Sif Yud Gimel applies instead of Sif Aleph. There are many Sifim in Shulchan Aruch on any given Simen. If it's under these conditions, the din is one way. Under those conditions, the din is a different way. Different conditions, the din is differently. So you have to listen to, you have to have patience, Gedul, to listen to the whole Shaila from the beginning to the end. Unfortunately, a lot of Rabbanim have no patience, so they're snappy. They don't want to bother, they don't want to waste time with the Balabas, so they give him a psak right away. You have to listen to the whole Shaila before you give him psak. You have to ask a lot of details. The person has to be careful. Paskening Shailas is an art. You have to have a lot of traditions. Yeah.
To what extent is modern Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh?
Achad Ha'am, the atheist, has an essay about that. Famous essay. He has a lot of famous essays. So one essay he writes, every language develops. So he writes, for example, the Mishnah says, Habanas Yazunu. Habanas Yazunu should have been Habanas Tizunena. The daughter is getting Zainus. Habanam Yishalo Alapsachm. So he says, the language developed. He says, the Habanas says, Loshin the Kaver, so should have said Tizunena. He said, the language developed like that. So Hebrew language also developed. Every language develops. The Satmar Rebbe had a whole attack that the modern Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh because they use the word Chashmal for electricity. Chashmal is an angel in Yecheskel. So it's an Aveira to you, but they defiled the name of the angel by calling all the swarm, everybody calls electricity Chashmal. Apparently, Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach didn't feel, they didn't agree with the Satmar Rebbe. They used the word Chashmal for electricity. That's the usage of the word. In fact, there's no there to use the word. Every language develops. No. Losh Nakai. Okay. Doesn't have to be biblical Hebrew. The Rambam wrote Mishnaic Hebrew. Doesn't have to be Mishnaic Hebrew either. Hebrew, the way it's developed. All the Gedolim in our generation write in the Hebrew, normal Hebrew, acceptable.
The Rosh Hashiva mentioned earlier the three steps about the beginning of Geula, and the second one was about fighting the war and wiping out the enemies. What does the Rosh Hashiva think about other forms of making peace, like treaties and other things which are more commonly used today?
Well, making peace treaties, that was always an idea. It's not a modern invention. The Ramban explains in that Hashmotus to the Minyan Ha'esen of the Ramam in Mitzvah Dalet, he has the famous passage where he says that one of the Melchemes Mitzvah is to maintain all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control. That, let's say, I was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So let's say the Russians will surround the city of Scranton and they say, we're not going to shoot, and we're not going to put anyone's life into danger. we want to take over Scranton. It should no longer be part of the United States of America. It should be part of Russia. But they're not putting anyone's life into Sakana. So the United States have the right to go to war to maintain its sovereignty over Scranton. So the B'nai Shabbatim, they do it all the time. That's just a couple of years ago. There was a war about the Falkland Islands. A garnish mit garnish. What do you mean? Who is the war? I forgot already. Between England and somebody?
Argentina.
Who cares about the Falkland? Sovereignty. If it's under our sovereignty, they're permitted to fight, they're permitted to go to war and to kill the enemy and to lose their own lives to maintain sovereignty. So whatever, by the Ummah Salam, you're permitted to go to war, by Yasmin Mechuyev to go to war. Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be Al-Pidin under Jewish sovereignty, under Jewish control. So if the enemy wants to take away Eretz Yisrael and annex it to Syria, to Jordan, or to Egypt, we're Mechuyev to go to war. It's not that we have the right to go to war. We're Mechuyev to go to war and to lose Jewish lives and to kill it. And not allowed to kill non-Jews either. We have a heter tzicha to kill the enemy, and a heter sikun to put our own Jewish soldiers into sakana, if we're pretty convinced that we're going to win the war. That's the condition. There's only a chiyav Muhammad. There's no chiyav to fight a losing battle. There's no chiyav there are three cases where there's a chiyav to fight a losing battle. That's Yehori Bal Yavar. Even if you know that by observing the mitzvah you're going to lose your life, so you have to put up a fight and give up your life. But outside of the Gimel Averus HaChamuras, there's no mitzvah to fight a losing battle. So when there's a chiyuv, Melchemes mitzvah, to preserve all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control, that's Bamedvar Mamurim, if we're pretty positive, you can never be positive unless you have a Navi telling you, promising you in advance. But if you don't have a Navi, you're never positive. But if it looks very, very much so that we're going to win the war, then we have to go to war and lose Jewish lives and cause the enemy to lose lives, in order to maintain Jewish sovereignty over all of Eretz Yisrael. So that's the Shaila, are we fighting a winning battle or a losing battle? So as many of the secular Jews in Eretz Yisrael say, we're fighting a losing battle. Because life is so uncomfortable here, every day someone else gets killed, every day there's another suicide bomber, there's so much aggravation. If we'll make peace with the enemy, give away this, give this away, give this away, be mevater and section of Eretz Yisrael, I feel in Anich that it's true. The whole thing is a baba maisa. It's not true. If you give them a finger, they'll take a hand. They'll just kill all the Jews. They're not interested in peace. I feel in Anich that it would be true. That if you give away land, it would be peaceful. So the secular Jews, many secular Jews claim, we're fighting a losing battle. We're maintaining Eretz Yisrael. You're winning the battle, but you're losing the war. Maintaining all the rights under Jewish control, but every day more people get killed. We'll make peace with the enemy and give them sections that they want to divide the land. So then it'll be peaceful. Like this, we're losing the war. And many religious Jews hold, no, we're winning the war. We're maintaining all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control. We're winning the war. So that's a shiloh. There's only a mitzvah to go to Melchemes mitzvah to maintain all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish sovereignty if you're pretty sure you're going to win the war. So the shiloh is, are we winning the war or are we losing the war? Who is the one who decides whether you're winning the war or losing the war? So that's a serious shiloh. I published an essay about this many years ago. I remember after I published the essay, I got a letter in the mail from Shara Gai. When I was a little boy, I used to read about Shara Gai in the newspapers. I didn't think he was alive anymore. I got a letter from this dead man. I got so scared. I came to his age. He's still alive. He must have been in his 80s or something. He read my essay and he was giving comments based on the essay. I got so scared. I don't think he's alive now. Maybe he's over 100. I don't know. I don't think he's alive. I remember at that time, he sent me some comments on my essay. So I expressed my opinion.
How does one go about choosing his profession?
Very serious issue. See, these are really shilas and halacha. How do you decide whom to marry? How do you decide whom to vote for? How do you decide where to live and what to do for a living? These are all shilas and halacha. How should I do avodas Hashem properly? Every person was given certain talents, and you're supposed to use the God-given talents. If a person has talents in music, so let him become a musician. Let him compose music. A person has talents in painting, so let him become an artist. A person has talents in, in medicine. So let him become a doctor. A person has talents in learning. So let him learn. Everyone is mukhif to learn. The artist with the musician, with the novelist, with all the people, the doctors and the lawyers, and the Indian chiefs, all the Jewish people are mukhif to learn Torah. But what should you do for a living? So that depends, where are your talents? The Gemara says, the Rabbanu Shalom and Gemara Chagiga, in the first parak, says, Rabbanu Shalom sheds 3 tears every day, based on a pasuk in Navi. So the Gemara says, 2 of the 3 tears are on the misplaced persons. The person who belonged to learning went to a secular field. The person who didn't belong in learning, the person belonged in a secular field, and he went into learning. Also a tragedy. You have people in the Rabbanus, have people in Chinuch who just don't belong. They're just ruining people's lives. I'm sure many of you have heard stories that a Rebbe in school turned off a student because he wasn't cut out to be a good Rebbe. Rabbanim and shuls a lot of times are not cut out to be rabbis in the shuls. So that's, Igmar considers that such a great tragedy, that a person is in the wrong field. That the Rabbanu Shalom sheds 2 of the 3 tears that he sheds every day over the misplaced persons.
Where's this
from? Chagiga, in the first pair. An Amid Beis. I don't know which down. Amid Beis, Vav Amid Beis. And I got it there. You have to consult with people who know you well. You have to take an aptitude test. Sometimes a person can't tell. You have to take an aptitude test to see what you're most cut out for. Or you have to consult with Talmid HaChamim who know you, but it doesn't help. You're going to go ask Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he doesn't know you. So what's it going to help you? You're going to ask a Rebbe who doesn't know you. You have to ask a Rebbe who knows you well. So if he knows you, understands the issues, and then he can guide you, he can help you. You can discuss with your parents. Parents know you well. It's a serious thing. What you do for a living, whom you marry, whom you vote for, everything is a shalei halacha. Has to be considered very seriously. I thought we solved all the world's problems already, yeah.
Should we be wearing a tchilat and narcissus? Or what the nachos?
I thought that you should. I thought safik derais and lechumer. If you have a safik that this may be the correct tchilas, you have everything to gain and nothing to lose. So why not? The Gemara says if you fell in and you used tchilas that was not correct, so the Gemara says, "Lo yehel alavan." So you made a mistake. So you yotze the mitzvah of lavan. So you don't have tchelis. So you have everything to gain and nothing to lose. If you would have shatnas, the tchelis string has to be a certain color, and it has to be, the material has to be from wool. So if you would have a garment that's made from linen and you put in a woolen string that has that's dyed with the chalazin and it's possible tchelis. So then you would be wearing shatnas unnecessarily. So then there wouldn't be a heter, because if you don't have kosher tchelis, so what do you have to put the woolen string for? You could have put all linen strings. You could have put cotton strings. You didn't need the woolen string. But we're not putting in tzitzis in the Begin Shel Pishtun. We don't put in Begin Shel Pishtun. That's a gzeres beishama. We pass on like beishama. You're not allowed to put tzitzis in the Begin Shel Pishtun, because you may fall in with pasulah tchelis. So you have everything to gain and nothing to lose. So why shouldn't you wear tchelis? I don't understand why they made such a tumult.
They're currently in Eretz Yisrael choosing the next chief rabbi, and there's a lot of discussion in the newspapers about what the purpose of the chief rabbinate of Eretz Yisrael should be. What's the, in terms of whether it should be a posek or someone a political figure, or someone who can deal with the secular. What's the issue?
I don't follow the news here. I live in America. I really don't follow. I don't know. It changed over the years. It changed different under different chief rabbis. It had a whole different connotation. I don't know.
If someone goes to Har Abai, should he be machmir for all 4 opinions on the Dome of Iraq, where it's placed in the Beit HaMikdash, and the opinions of the different amas? Which ones does he have to take?
I don't know. I just know there are several opinions. I never went into it. There was one summer that I learned in Kiryat Arba. I learned by Chavrusa with the one who wrote the book on the Har Abayis. What's his name? Koren, Zalman Koren. He used to be a Rebbe in the yeshiva in Kiryat Arba. Now he's a big man. Now he does work on the Bir Agra and the Yerushalmi, and he published a big book on the Har Abayis. He's supposed to be an expert on Har Abayis. But I never read his book. I don't know. There are different opinions exactly. The Gemara tells you how big the Har Abayis is, and it's twice as big as it's supposed to be. So obviously they added on, and they were never mekadosh that extra area. So that's a suffix. Where is the Har Abayis that has kedusha, and where is the Har Abayis, which is the part that doesn't have kedusha? So you have to be careful. We're all Tamei Mason. So you're not allowed to admit Min HaTorah, Tamei Mason is Mutter and Harabais. Only Asa Nazar, because not a Tumah Yotza on the Gufa. But Midir Rabbanon, on the inner part of the Harabais, Midir Rabbanon, there are three parts to the Harabais. So in the inner parts of the Harabais, the Tamei Mason is not allowed to go. So you have to know all the different opinions, and then be careful not to violate them. I wouldn't go to the Harabais, even though I think it's important, we should all go. You go to Mikveh, you go in the area where it's sure, because the Rabbanut said you shouldn't go. So I don't like it when the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael give psukim for America. I don't think they know what in the world they're talking about. They don't know what's going on in America. They don't know the Metzius. And I don't think it's right that American Rabbanim should express an opinion on an Israeli shayla. So if the chief rabbi, and right now the chief rabbi, and says no one should go on the Harabais, period. So if that's what they say, I don't think it's right that the American Rabbanim should go.
The Rosh Yeshiva mentioned earlier about certain steps that need to be taken before we're allowed to build a Beit HaMikdash. But even if we don't have those prerequisites, would it in theory be possible to bring some Karbano to do some kind of avoda that is able to be done?
You would have to make a Mizbeach. The Mizbeach, the Raman writes, Makam Mizbeach Mechuvan B'Yoyser, has to be a specific location. So the Mizbeach in Bai Sheni was 32 Amos by 32 Amos on the ground. Then it got up, it was smaller. But on the ground, it was 32 Amos. So you don't have to make a Mizbeach 32 Amos. You can make Amo Alama, it has to be square. But the Amo Alama has to be somewhere in that area of the 32 by 32 that it was in the Bai Sheni. So there are different opinions as to where, how much is an Amma, and where the Mizbech used to be. I'm not familiar with Rabbi Zalman Koren's book. You have to investigate. Is there an area, an Amma Alama, that everybody agrees was the Mokam HaMizbech? Then you can make a little tiny Mizbech Amma Alama. That'll be L'chola Day is good. But then there are a lot of issues. Rabbi Pesach Lefrank published in the end of his Tshuvas on Yerideya, he has a whole kuntris about the possibility of akrobus karbonis bismanazeh. And then people sent him in comments, so they had so many comments on the comments, and now it's published as a separate sefer. Mikdash Melech, I think it's called. Very beautiful sefer. So he raises all the issues involved in the possibility of akrobus karbonis bismanazeh. Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer thought that he solved all the world's problems. Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiveger. In the late 1800s, so he thought we should make a Mizbech and bring Karbonis. He thought he solved all the problems. But there are many problems that the Sarav Tzvi Pesach Frank points out. There are a lot of problems that he didn't solve. There was another Rav from Russia who was friendly with the Chafetz Chaim. He wrote a Sefer Karnas HaMizbeach that was reprinted in recent years, also about the possibility of being Makor Karbonis Bizman HaZeh. So he writes, Yedidi HaGoyen HaChafetz Chaim, still alive, Shlita, he wrote the Sefer while the Chafetz Chaim was alive. So he quotes the issues that the Chafetz Chaim raised, and he raises some issues. He gives solutions to some of the issues, but they didn't really solve all the issues. The Kohen has to be, you have to know that the fellow's a Kohen, you have to have a Kohen Miyuchas, that's a question. You have to have Big Dekuna, you have to have Big Dekuna, have to be made properly. We're not sure what they're supposed to look like, the Big Dekuna. So there are a lot of sfeikas involved. It's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. How to be makor karbonos. Even if you know all of Seder Kachim inside out, upside down, there's still a lot of sveikas and akrobas karbonos.
We will take one more question. Take one more question.
One question with 10 parts. Yeah.
The concept of gogoling, how do they explain to Chayas Mason? There's a whole gogoling.
I'm not familiar. I don't know. There was in the days of the Rishonim. In the days of the Rishonim, what? No, in the days of the Rishonim, there was one of the Gdoli Hador who has been forgotten. Was Reb Chizdoy Kreskes. Once in a while, the Sheitim Kabetzes quotes me at the same time as the Ran. He was looked up to as a Gadolata. So we have very little from him in Halacha, but he wrote a Sefer Or Hashem, a book on Jewish philosophy. So he has three sections to the book. He has what we believe in, what we don't believe in, and what's not part of our religion. Maybe yeah, maybe no, has nothing to do with our religion. So Gilgulim is in the third part. He says it has nothing to do with our religion. That what color is Mars? It's not part of our religion. It could be red, it could be blue. It's not relevant. What's the distance of the moon from the earth? What's the distance of the sun from the moon? It's not part of our religion. So he writes that Gilgulim is irrelevant. It's not part of our religion. I don't know. There's a Gemara in the end of Bab Metzia, when the Gemara comments on the Pasuk, Chumash, Baruch Atah B'Vayecho, Baruch Atah B'Tzeisecho. So the Gemara says, Shetehib, Yitziyoscha Min Ha'olam K'biyoscha Min Ha'olam. Just like when you were born, you came in Belichet, you were clean, no sins, Shomash HaNasat B'Tahirihi, some so too, when you die, Shetehay, Yitziyoscha Min Ha'olam Belichet. So the Rashash writes, Anad Gemara, Mikan Ktsas Stira, the Balei HaGilgul. This Gemara seems to be slightly in contradiction to those who believe in Gilgul, because they believe that there's such a thing as a soul who did an Aveira in a previous life, and he comes back to this world with a tainted soul. He's Biyoscha Lo'elam Ba'Aveira, and he comes to be Mesake in the Aveira that he did in the previous life. So he writes, Mikan Ktsas Tira Le'Balei HaGilgul, from the Gemara it seems to appear. So many Hasidim will not learn the Rashash. Period. Rashash was an apikeres. He doesn't believe in Gilgul Neshamas. So goodbye. Not allowed to learn. Okay. It's like cutting off your nose despite the other guy. Rashash is meridik. Rashash is unbelievable. Rashash was a businessman. He wasn't a rabbi. I remember Rabbi Gifter once made a comment. There are two balabatim whom he respects very much. One is the Rashash and one is Rabbi Leib Shachor. As a sefer HaChumash, Leib Shachor was a balabas who lived in Eretz Yisrael in the later years. So these two balabatim he respected very much. Yes, for him. They have Agnon has a Shai Agnon has a book. I forgot. It's a funny book. It's called Sefer Sipur. I forgot some funny catchy name. Something like that. Some strange name. And it's all a collection of quotations, like Believe It or Not, from different Svarim. So he has one thing about Gilgul and Shamas. So he quotes a story from a Shabbos at Shulah Sefer. That's the name of the Sefer? Ah, I forgot. So he quotes from a Shulah Sefer the following story. That there was a boy married a girl, and the father-in-law was supporting him. There was no yeshiva, so his sister used to sit and learn by the window, by the open window. He used to learn in his father-in-law's home. He used to learn all the time. Bayoma, Balayla, everybody in the community loved him, and he wouldn't harm a fly. Everybody liked him, everybody respected him, so learn the person. So one fine day they announced that the king is going to be coming through the city, and they had to have security. So they had soldiers on top of the rooftops with rifles, and the king was going through in the middle. So it turns out someone threw a stone and killed the king. Or someone shot a bullet, whatever, killed the king. So the people from the rooftop, everybody was looking around, who can it possibly be? The only possibility was this yeshiva guy. So they arrested him, and the Balabatim said to the rabbi, speak to the government. He's innocent. Yeshiva Bacher said he's innocent. He didn't do it. The rabbi said, Dina de Machus Adina. Let him do whatever they have to do. Then they have a trial. They said to the rabbi, they can convict him. He says, Dina de Machus Adina, let him do whatever he wants. Then they convict him. Rabbi, they're going to kill him. Dina de Machus Adina. Then they kill him. So the Balabatim were furious at the rabbi. He didn't even lift a finger to do anything. So they had a funeral. So they had the body in an aron, and they took the aron in front of the shul. They said to him, then we're going to go to the cemetery. So when they took the aron to the shul, they didn't have an aron like we have, a box closed on top. They carried him on a what do you call it?
Stretcher.
On a stretcher. They carried the body on a stretcher. So the rabbi stands in front of the shul, and he says, this is in a sefer, Shas Shiva says to the dead man, get up and tell him your story, he says in Yiddish. So the dead body gets up, and he says, "Vayadu Evan B. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was in prison, and I was the first one who threw a stone at him. And I was never punished for throwing the stone at Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And it's already the 10th time I came back as a Gilgul in this world to be Mesakan Da'Aveira. And each time I never succeeded. And now I'm innocent. I didn't throw the stone at the king. I didn't kill him. It was a stone. Someone threw a stone. So I'm innocent. but I'm being punished. I was punished because I threw the stone at Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He said, okay. The rabbi said, okay, go back to sleep. So they went and they buried him. I remember one summer I was in Eretz Yisrael. I was in Efrat one summer with the NCSY program. They used to be in Efrat. So that's Chacham Avadia gives a drasha every year. So I remember before Tisha B'Av, he gave a drasha Matzai Shabbos. They always, this Sunday, yesterday I was going in a taxi, so the taxi cab driver was listening to the news, so they quoted what Chacham Avadia said about Lapid. Okay. So they always quote what he had to say. So they were attacking Chacham Avadia, said before Shabbos Chazon. He said, all of the Jews that were killed in the Holocaust, they were innocent, they were tzaddikim. Why were they killed? So he said, there must have been a Gilgal of people in the previous generation. 6 million Jews were Gilgulim of the previous generation. So the newspapers were attacking him. He only says it because he's a Sfardi, the Ashkenazim suffered, the Sfardim didn't suffer in the Shoah. That's why he said such a silly thing. So he started writing back and forth, about Gilgulim. We do believe in Gilgulim. So I remember my next door neighbor showed me this Sefer by Agnon with this story from the Sefer Shalos HaTshuvos about the guy who was by Yadu Evenbi. Nunu. But Rabbi Chizdoy Kreske says, it's not part of our religion. Maybe yes, maybe no, has nothing to do with our religion. It's not crucial. The Gemara says that Ein Ben David Bo, at Sheikh Lekon Nesham Shebaguf. There's a chamber in heaven that's called Guf, Gimel Vav Pei. And all the Jewish souls are located in that chamber. And every time another baby, a Jewish baby, is born, this hastens the coming of Mashiach. When all the Jewish souls will be born, then Mashiach will come. So if all the Jewish souls are going to be born, so there won't be any more babies later on? So that's what they quote from the Arizal. No, later on there'll be a Gilgal in Shamas. After the B'as HaMashiach, we'll be recycling, and we'll start back from the Neshamas, from Matan Torah. Those are the first Jews. Neshamas, the first in will be the first out. So the Neshamas from Matan Torah, they'll have a Gilgal. So that's why there's a Pasuk in Navi that the women, I forgot the Pasuk, the women in the days of Mashiach, when it's going to be holding by Gilgal Neshamas, will be on a higher Madrega than the men. Why? Because in the Dora Midbar, the women were at a higher Madrega than the men. The women didn't want to participate in Chedo Egel, and the women had Chibas Haaretz, Merai Slavchod. And the Kliyokar writes that if they would have sent Meraglos, they would have given a good report because there were men, Meraglim, and Bishchus Nashim Tzidkonis, Nigal Abbasenim and Mitzrayim. So the Dora Midbar, the women were on a higher Madrega than the men. So when Mashiach will come, Mashiach will only come after all the Neshamas will be used up. So how are there going to be any Jewish babies born? So there'll be Gilgal Neshamas, so they'll be recycling the Neshamas from the Yitzias Mitzrayim. So that's why the women will be on a higher Madrega. I don't see that we're holding there yet. I don't see yet that the women are higher Madrega than the men. Same Madrega.
If the Rebbe talks already about Neshama, Sfad of Rambam, Rav Sadia Gaon, don't mention the Klal Ilu Neshama and Kaddish Al Yisrael, Shenia Kol Kach Kadosh, Ratzibur, the Rambam, Lo Mone B'Klal Kaddish, Lo Maskir B'Klal.
Maskir Kaddish, Tfilah.
Lo Kaddish B'Tfilah.
Yeah, Kaddish Yosem, no, Zeminig Mulchar. Kaddish Yosem HaMakor Zeh B'Zohar. Zeh lo mafia B'Gmar. Okay. Don't know. Good question. It's a good idea. Makes life easier. Very good. Shalav Hatzlacha.